Bienvenidos to our latest edition of Corazón Bilingüe. Join us as we explore the dynamics of language, culture, and the art of poetry. I'm your host, Brenda Nettles Rojas. Con este programa, exploramos la dinámica del lenguaje, la cultura y la creación poética, sometimes in English y a veces en español. Our program fluctuates between English and Spanish. Joining us today is Christopher Carmona, who is a beat poet who is back in the Rio Grande Valley. Thank you for joining us, Christopher.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, Christopher, you just finished your PhD program through the Texas A&M College Station.
Yes, that's true.
How does it feel to be back in the Valley?
It's good. I mean, I haven't been back in the Valley for a while, so it's good to come back home. We're living in Alamo now, working in Brownsville, but it's good to be back. Yeah.
Well, and you've been very active in the poetry scene here in the Rio Grande Valley, and now you're doing some, bringing more writers and organizing some readings and events in Brownsville.
Yes, the University of Texas Brownsville started up a writers series, which we're calling Writers Live at UTB, and we're bringing in four writers a year. And this past October, we brought in Chuck Taylor to read, and then in November, we brought in Glenn Sorstad, who is the Poet Laureate of Saskatchewan. And in February, we're bringing in Manuel Luis Martinez, who has just got inducted in the Texas Institute of Letters. He's written Crossing, Drift, Day of the Dead. And in April, we have Sarah Maria Ortiz, who is the daughter of Simon Ortiz, the famous Native American poet. And so that's what we have this year. And we started this up at Brownsville to bring in more writers to the area. And we're having them doing workshops and doing and readings and classroom visits. So we're bringing them through over there in Brownsville.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about the poetic renaissance here in the Rio Grande Valley. Mm-hmm. We talked about it with Chuck Taylor and a lot of the poets. I mean, it's just there isn't a week that goes by that there's not some type of reading somewhere in the Valley.
Yes, it's growing. I mean, when I was back in the late 90s and early 2000s, there wasn't much of a scene. There was basically the Lopez Bar reading that would go on. That was probably the most prominent. But since I came back there, especially over the past 4 or 5 years, there's been a growth of poetry readings and interest in poetry, and it's grown a lot. It really has. We're going from the Posture Poetry and Vinos to We Need Words to, you know, all these different events that are happening now. So it's changed. It's really grown a lot.
Yeah, valley-wide. I know, like you said, Lopez Bar and Grill, and then after that, the Narciso Martinez Cultural Arts Center about 11 years ago started, you know, four or five writers decided they wanted to start sharing their work. And now it's just spread like wildfire. And I think some of the evidence is not only in the readings, but in the number of local publishers.
Yes. Well, Sloop Press is not local. They're out of...
But they're now interested in our local writers.
Yes, the Sloop Press has an initiative to publish South Texas writers from the Valley because they recognize there is a renaissance here. And so we have Sloop Press's Edward Vidal's book coming out next, and then Isaac Chavadilla's book after that. So... Right now they're starting to really focus in this area because of the number of writers that are coming out here.
Right. We also have El Sarape Press that's been publishing for a while, and Otras Voces Publishing, which will be publishing Travis Whitehead's book. It's a nonfiction piece, but Rosy Lima, a Spanish writer, poet, her work is in the works as well. And then there's Vau.
Vau, that's the press that David Bowles works with. They do the Along the River anthology every year. And that one, they just had a big release for their anthology, I think, like a month ago.
Yeah, and then we also have Sarah Book Publishing that's even publishing local novelists and short story writers as well. So, I mean, I think the evidence for what's happening here in the Rio Grande Valley is quite apparent, and it's exciting.
Yes, I mean, it's definitely a lot bigger than it's ever been, and there's a lot more writers coming in and out of here. I don't know if it has anything to do with the MFA program at Pan Am that started a few years ago that's producing, but a lot of the poets coming out of the area are not actually in the MFA program. So, I mean, there could be a lot of different reasons, which we haven't really had time to really examine. since we're kind of in the middle of it right now.
Right, we're living it. I mean, I think the Renaissance, and I think we've talked about it before, the Renaissance that happened in Paris and in New York and in other pockets of literary circles is happening. We're in the midst of making history, in a sense.
Yes. I mean, a lot of the writers used to be New York was the center for writers, and it's moved to the Southwest. A lot of famous writers are now in the Southwest. You have Joy Harjo, you have Cormac McCarthy is in El Paso, you have, Larry McMurtry is living there in Archer. You have a lot of people, Dagoberto Gilb, they're all Southwest writers. And I don't know if it has to do with the area itself or the fact that New York is probably too expensive for writers to live in, but there is something about the area. The Valley itself has had a few writers that have come out. I mean, Rolando Hinojosa Smith and Gloria Anzaldúa. And I think there's something here. Something that's been untapped for a long time.
I think so, and I think we're seeing it in all levels of the arts world. I mean, Mark Clark, who was working with the Smithsonian Museum, retired down here and opened Galleria 409.
Yeah.
And now is hosting events there as well. And
Art Walk, which started about, 5 or 6 years ago? That started about the same time as Renaissance. So there's an arts renaissance. It's not just literary that's happening.
Absolutely. So. Well, I know that you have a book out, or two books, book and a book out.
Yes.
And I know that you're working on another manuscript, but I know we're talking about the Renaissance in the Valley, but we'd love to hear some of your work as well.
Okay. What I can do here is I can read, I'll read one from the new manuscript I'm working on. This one is a political piece. It's really dealing with the death of an activist, a poet from Juarez. Her name was Susana Chavez, and she was killed, I want to say, about a year and a half ago. And they found her body in a dumpster, and her hand was chopped off. Mm-hmm. And she was an advocate for women's rights in Juarez. And so because of that, I wrote this poem, which is kind of dealing with the entire situation. So in a way, it's a kind of a history lesson of the area, but it's called Mexicans Without Means. They say April is the cruelest month. Well, it certainly was for one white boy on a spring break trip in the last year of 1980. Found in a ditch on a Matamoros ranch, his name splashed across newspapers and television screens for years. But this poem is not about that boy. This poem is about the 14 other Mexicans in that shallow grave whose eyelids had been eaten away by the grub worms, revealing nothing but mud and the bottom of boots, tongues long ago cut off and sacrificed to the gods of popular media. Their name only worth the space of a number, 14. They were Mexicanos, sin nombre. Or maybe August was the cruelest month when 26 migrant workers were found locked in a railroad car, boiled to death in a desert land where the air burns. But not before they paid coyote everything for a chance to work 12 hours a day, stealing away jobs that Americans forgot ever existed. They worked in order to feed families left behind, certainly not before their towns were decimated by mass production and the lowest price cost analysis. They were Mexicanos, sin dinero. Maybe the cruelest month was October when a visiting Colorado man was killed by Mexican pirates. While his wife watched in horror, his body was never recovered. Her shock heard round the world from early morning news program to early morning news program. Mexican pirates are worse than Caribbean pirates. No Johnny Depp here looking like a gay Keith Richard on acid. This man was just another casualty in the Mexican drug wars. A war, Heartland America, nothing to do with. Just vacationing in its waters while the river washes away 50,000 dead. No names, no space for memory, no thoughts more than a passing pity. No voices, one tongue speaks for them all. Nothing but laser fences and shaking heads. They're just Mexicanos sin causa. Let's not forget about January, when a vanished woman lost her hand and her life, launching her voice and her body into the war for equality. No soldier's funeral for her, no folded flag, no 21-gun salute. She fought a war of insurmountable odds with only her ideas and her tongue. She stood at the forefront of every woman's rights, shoulders straight, fists clenched, conviction in her eyes. She slung poems at the abyss and marked her words with blood. She gave her soul to the wind and hoped she would be felt. Yet there she lies in a dumpster filled with yesterday's rage, her left hand taken, a warning to all. No national Suzanne Chavez holiday, no patriotic swelling of eyes for the soldier of change who helped shape the world for the better. Just a few words from a few papers. Mexican woman risked it all so a girl could walk the streets without fear of being taken, violated. She was left like yesterday's Facebook post. She was just a Mexicana seen loose. Or maybe it was May when little DeSanta Flores was swallowed whole, leaving a mother wondering, why, bullet, have you feasted on such young flesh? But the bullet knows it's not the physics of combustible powders, the spark of metal on metal. It's the force of a finger pulling hatred and righteousness, because Mexican flowers can't bloom in Arizona. They simply don't have the means. Little Brisena did not die without her name. She was buried on the 10th page of record. No Today Show special for a mother left without a husband, a daughter. No 24-hour news cycle repeating this tragedy of a little girl's death. Nothing for Mexicans without means.
Quite a powerful piece. Poetry and words has that potential to pack so much in that sometimes you can't say in other type of writing.
Yeah, I think so. I think poetry has kind of the ability to use through images and tell a story that that can't really be told in any other way. It's the imagery, I think, that works it. And, you know, I'm dealing with about, I guess, 30, 40 years of history here and kind of trying to compact it down to what's...
And it definitely comes across. I mean, I don't think that, as we said, in other writing forms, you could capture so much in such a tight space.
No, I think that's one of the unique functions of poetry is it's able to do that in such a way. I mean, I think Gary Snyder was the one who said that it's the only form of art that has been unchanged throughout the entire course of human history. And I was talking to a poet, to Helena Maria Villamontes, and she was saying that after the Virginia Tech incident happened, the way that people responded to it was through poetry. People started gathered together and they started to read poetry in a way that they couldn't really write a novel or really make an artwork that quickly. It's something that's spontaneous, but yet it comes out in a way that I think is built into us. Mm-hmm. So I think poetry has the power to do that.
And like you said, those images, because so many of those images that you just shared with us in this poem stay with you and kind of take you back in time.
That's kind of the hope, I guess.
Right.
For poetry to work.
Right. And I think what we see in a lot of what we hear in a lot of the readings and a lot of the work of some of the Frontera writers is life along the Frontera.
Yes, in all its senses. I mean, living on the border, living on the Frontera is really a unique space. And we're living in a time where it's become more apparent because we're dealing with a time that where immigration has been such a huge issue. But at the same time, it's an ever-changing world where the border has become the focus of a lot of things. Since 9/11, the border has tripled. I mean, the amount of Border Patrol agents around here. And on the southern border, I'm not sure about the northern border. But so there's been a lot more attention paid here. But then the people who are living here are also dealing with the Mexican drug wars. So you have a lot of refugees coming from Mexico, basically moving shops. And that's the one thing I noticed about moving back to the Valley. When I left, there weren't nearly as many taquerias or those thrift shops around as there are now. I mean, a lot of them, what you saw in Reynosa and Los Flores and Matamoros. And when I went to El Paso last summer, a friend of mine was telling me that they went from population like 60,000 to 600,000 because of all the refugees from Juarez. So you're mixing together cultures that were separated by a river, but now are forced to kind of be together refugee situation here,
right,
mixed in with the Chicano experience. So all that is shifting in the poetics. I mean, and I think that's one thing that makes this kind of area unique.
There's a lot to write about.
There's a
and
lot.
We're seeing, too, that the frontera, that merging of the languages, even in the work.
Yes.
At one time, either you wrote in English or in Spanish. And, of course, the Chicano movement introduced a lot of Spanish
yes.
into the poetry. But now it's almost like a norm.
Yes, exactly. The mixing of the languages, the code switching, as it's called. But I think it's just natural language to people. And I think one thing that's really come about in a lot of the work is really this idea that it's its own language almost. It's not a dialect, but it's its own language with certain things, certain words that are created, and people becoming comfortable with that. It comes out in the work. So I think that's what's. That's one of the things that makes it unique to live on the border, from the valley all the way to El Paso. If we're dealing with Texas in particular, if we go all the way through Arizona and California, they have similar. Examples of what's going on. I mean, Arizona has been a center of attention for the past 4 years. But a lot of Texas has really taken a lot of different, has its own kind of aspect. But, as Latinos, Chicanos have really been kicking up a lot of poetry recently.
Absolutely. There's that bicultural and bilingual community of artists.
Yes.
That are emphasizing the bilingual and the bicultural aspect.
We're also dealing with a really rough economic time. We're dealing with an ever-changing racial politics. And every time that occurs in history, you have a rise in the arts. In the 1920s and 30s, when basically the Great Depression happened, you had the rise of these WPA writers, the World Project writers, who were John Steinbeck, Sinclair Lewis. We have and Sherwood Anderson, and all these different writers came about during this time as a response to what was happening. The Grapes of Wrath is a direct response. And, and there's a lot about political times, the 60s. You had mm-hmm. certainly a kick up of a lot of counterculture writings, the Beats and all these other writers. And in the 80s and 90s, especially in the 90s, and look at 93 with the LA riots, you had a huge resurgence of writers. Just recently, they had a 20th anniversary, and they had a huge poetry readings of poets. So something about the political and the economic times has really reinvigorated a lot of the artists in the
right.
area.
And I think it's like you said, there's so many voices that need to be heard.
Exactly.
And so many stories that need to be expressed. And as we mentioned earlier, poetry allows us to really make an impact.
Yes.
And maybe make people or help people see it more vividly?
Yes. I think that poetry works in a different way. I'm not saying that fiction doesn't, but I think poetry does is in a way, you can read a poem in a couple of minutes. It takes you a lot longer to kind of read through a short story or a novel. And we're dealing with a time that's also technologically different with iPhones and iPads and Twitter and Facebook messages. So we have to a lot of this might be going back to poetry because it is more, compressed in the language in shorter time. We have 24-hour worlds now. And, Audre Lorde says that poetry is economical because you can write a poem in 10 minutes. You can write a poem on the subway. So poetry is for the people, and people who are working 3 jobs can't sit down and write a book for 3 months. So they can write a poem, when they're traveling, and it becomes the source of the people, the art form of people that can't afford to really do anything else. And I think that's where its compactness gives it its power.
Absolutely. And another thing that has really helped that poetic renaissance in the Rio Grande Valley, I think, is the supportive network that has emerged. There's a really strong sense of community among the writers.
Yeah, I think it's really come together, and it's been really present with the readings. I think with the readings, one of the major things that readings do is they bring together poets so that people get to know each other and they realize they're not writing on their own, that there's other people. And then that starts to form structures, and people start to, as they become more and more involved with the community, there is a sense that there is a community. And
right.
And that helps build and create more writing. People want to write more and read more. So I think you're right. There is the community is strong right now.
And then given that strong community, it helps the craft of poetry. Because as you belong to a community and as you participate in these readings, you, as a writer, you strive to really perfect your work.
I think so. I think the more voices you hear, I mean, the more, like, the same thing you said to Ben about the more you read, the better your stuff gets, because you're getting multiple voices. And as the more voices you hear, the more you're able to find your own voice, the more you shape your own voice. And I think that's important. The more poets you're around, the more you're starting to hear these different voices. You know, so you start to develop and start to almost, I guess, almost subconsciously try to perfect your own writing so you can sound better, so you can be better, and you can kind of compete in a world where everybody seems to sound better.
Right.
So you try. So it does help to help bring your poetry and to, you know, make sure or to help you become a better poet in a lot of ways.
Right. And another thing that we're finding is that a lot of poets are becoming organizers.
Yes. And there are quite a few. We have, like Edward Reed Downey does the Pasta Poetry in Vino events, and Alan Oak does them out in Brownsville. Rachel Vela does We Need Words, and we have
Julieta Corpus in Weslaco.
I don't know if their Savory Perks is still around.
She has them in another location.
Julieta's been doing it for a long time, too. And Narcisa Martinez has been going for a long time.
Yeah, the Writers Forum, they continue to meet on the second Tuesday of every month, the first Tuesday of every month in San Benito. And it's almost like a rite of passage. Everybody wants to make sure that they've read at the Narcisa Martinez Cultural Arts Center.
Yes.
And then, of course, the Valley International Poetry Festival.
The Valley International Poetry Festival. And that happens every year. And then, this year, not this year, but 2013, we're bringing the Beat Festival into Edinburgh. And so we're working with different people. And so that'll be interesting to bring in a very different crowd.
Absolutely. Well, we want to make sure we want to listen to another of your poems. I know that we've been, again, talking in general about the poetic renaissance.
Okay, I'll read my Firefly poem. Okay, so this poem was written after I read an article that the Fireflies are disappearing from Texas. And a lot of that has to do with the global warming. They're going to wetter climates, as we have a huge drought here in Texas. So I wrote this poem about, it's called Where Have All the Fireflies Gone? Where have all the fireflies gone? Down to the local bar, drinking Mexican moonshine, with chicharras no longer strumming prickly legs for nights like these. Collecting unemployment checks and hoping their next job won't be sent to less privileged bugs who also work days. Where have all the bees gone? No longer buzzing around, sneaking pollen from eager flowers. They've taken the last shuttle off this rock, and they've taken their honey with them. The drones have had enough, no more pollen to fill the comb, without the proper regulations from the queen. Why have all the mantises stopped praying? Is there no hope left for the grass in the air? Have they given up on a higher power and now practice existentialism? Have they put down their clenched pincers and decided they can no longer wait for God to vanquish their enemies? They're on their own, and so they hang their heads and go home to watch twilight and try to figure out why vampires sparkle. Oh, why have all the hummingbirds stopped humming? Is it because they can no longer afford to flap their wings 60 times a second and now have to take the bus? Or is it because there's no more wildflowers? They're all owned by corporations, and the hummingbird has to pay a fee to pollinate. Oh, where have the fireflies gone? No longer filling my empty mayonnaise jars on cool summer nights. Now the night knows the silence of darkness and the bleakness of a dry, still carcass.
A little bit of politics, a little bit of nostalgia, a lot of imagery.
Yes. Well, I mean, this is kind of the times, and we got to deal with. The new book is obviously very much. Well, I wouldn't say it's more political, but it's political, directly affecting the times and the times we're living in. But also, I mean, the fact that we are in a changing ecology. I mean, we're losing fireflies, we're losing bees, and it's kind of a strange situation, dangerous for certain things. But yeah, that's why I wrote that poem.
Well, Christopher, what do you see ahead in this coming year of 2013 for this poetic renaissance here in the Rio Grande Valley?
There's going to be readings constantly happening. I think they're going to start to evolve. One of the things that I've been talking with Rachel Val with is starting a workshop series instead of a reading series. So we're going to start hosting workshops probably at the Edinburgh Library, probably like every month, probably the last Saturday of every month. And so kind of start to refine the poets as they are. Mm-hmm. So free workshops where they can go in there and we can talk with and they can write some poetry and really try to perfect the craft a bit more. So that's one thing we're trying to do, try to evolve out of. I mean, the readings are great, but I think we start focusing on actually sharpening everybody's writing, maybe.
Right, because the readings, one of the benefits is that it's drawing new people.
Yes.
And giving people the confidence or encouragement to go before the mic, because mm-hmm. we have a lot of closet writers.
Yes.
And a lot of them are emerging. And so I think the workshops would be kind of the next logical step.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I think it is. I think it's something that's necessary, and it's something that, you know, you don't have to take a class for. You can just kind of show up. It's an idea that's been in play in El Paso through Tumblewords for the past 30 years. They do monthly writing workshops and invite writers to come in and read. Oh, Dallas has them, and I think it's something that we need to kind of fill that void.
Well, Christopher, it's been a real pleasure. I look forward to inviting you back on the program and continuing the conversation on poetry and this poetic renaissance in the Rio Grande Valley.
Okay, well, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
You are listening to Corazón Bilingüe. We invite you to join us again as we continue our conversation on language, culture, and the art of poetry. Los invitamos que nos acompañen de nuevo, mientras que sigamos explorando la dinámica del lenguaje, la cultura y la creación poética. If you would like to hear more, visit us at www.corazonbilingue.com. Gracias por acompañarnos.